You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio, 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vandeweel.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, September 25th, 2014. Coming up in tonight's newscast, City Council budget hearings, Jay Leno comes to town, and repercussions of Bedford's Williams Dam.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street. But first, these local headlines.
The Bloomington City Council pressed Mayor Mark Cruzan for information about parking meters on September 23rd. Council members asked about the financial status of the meter project. The questions came up as the council considered next year's city budget. Council member Marty Speckler wanted to know if the meters are making money for city government.
I think the public and we need to know when you have a comprehensive picture. Of the entire parking operation that we began more than a year ago. Mm-hmm. That is, revenues from the meters, revenues from the garages, and so forth, as against all of the expenses of personnel and so forth. Are we making money on the parking, this large new parking venture, or are we not?
Cruzan did not directly answer the question. He said the financial picture is complex, and he said the administration provided written responses to similar questions prior to the meeting.
Category 2, $3,500 office supplies, $3,951 fuel and oil, $17,000, itemized. It's an itemized list.
Yes, but I think we need a total picture. And I do appreciate, believe me, I do appreciate the idea that these parking revenues are going to go for related expenses downtown. And I endorse that, that approach,
law.
Absolutely. Yeah. And what that would mean to me, and I think to many of the public, is, well, yes, we're making a bit of a profit on the parking operations, and look what we're doing with it to make the downtown more accessible,
sure.
More attractive, and so on. I think they'll understand that too.
City documents state parking money is divided into at least 5 separate funds. At least 3 city departments do work related to parking, and the city has said from the start it expects to spend the first few years paying off the initial costs of meters.
For the most part, the meter money is going back into, for the first 3 years, 4 years, going into the payment of the meters themselves so it won't be until longer term that money will be profit and putting back into, almost in its entirety at that point, But we're also learning as we go on. For instance, the bank charges, we're learning.
Board member Steve Boland asked for the administration to present a clearer parking budget in the future.
We'd like to see something more like a program budget for parking, which is an unusual program in that it spans several departments, even when it was, even in its old incarnation, spans several departments. So, but under the new, with the new March 2013 meter ordinance, it's substantially bigger program than it ever was.
Cruzan said he expects the parking meter program to change soon. He gave no specifics on those changes except to say the city government would probably be making less money.
My assumption is that there are going to be changes made in metering that are going to result in revenue decrease. And so you're going to have to expand the time of payback. But it's also true that there will be more people living downtown, more housing projects being built, and I think you'll start to see increased usage of meters as well, And so the question is, which will outpace the other?
Cruzan said his administration is consulting with downtown businesses and the Chamber of Commerce about changes to meter policy.
Famous stand-up comedian and former talk show host Jay Leno will perform at the IU Auditorium on Friday night, October 17th, during IU's homecoming weekend. Leno was host of The Tonight Show for 22 years, following the legendary Johnny Carson. His final show ran in February of this year. Also appearing that evening will be Bloomington singer-songwriter-guitarist Charlie Joseph.
Indiana University issued a statement yesterday expressing deep concern over the conviction and life sentence of Chinese scholar Ilham Todi handed down this week. Todi is an economist and longtime advocate for promoting peaceful coexistence between China's ethnic Uyghurs, a Muslim minority concentrated in China's far western province of Xinjiang, and China's Han majority. He has been critical of Chinese government's oppressive policies toward minorities, which he said were generating more violent resistance among mostly Muslim Uyghurs, according to an op-ed piece in today's New York Times. Todi was supposed to take up a position as a visiting scholar at Indiana University in February of 2013, but he was detained at Beijing's airport and denied permission to leave China. The statement issued yesterday by Indiana University said, quote, "The university continues to be concerned that some IU faculty members are having difficulties traveling to China for the purposes of research exchange with academic colleagues there." The European Union, United States government, and the United Nations have all denounced the sentence.
Monroe County will be processing its own recyclables in a matter of months. The City Council approved a budget September 17th that includes money to build a materials recovery facility, or MRF. Officials at the County Solid Waste Management District have debated for years whether to build the facility. Currently, the district pays a private company, Republic Services, to haul away its recyclables. But the district board president, Steve Volan, says it's not always clear what happens to those materials.
We have not been able to get proof from our vendors, from our contractors, that every bit of recycling that we've collected necessarily gets recycled once it leaves our possession. We have followed trucks occasionally, and they have not necessarily gone to a recycling center but to a landfill.
Volan told the council there is money to be made on recycling. He said the district just needs to build a facility to bale and store the materials.
If you take the recyclables and you put them into truck or train car size bales, you can get, I calculated this price years ago after the recession began. On average, our recyclables are worth $100 a ton. And we had been paying $40 a ton on average to dispose of them, to throw them away. I think you can see, I mean, we're excited about the idea of reducing the tax burden eventually, of doing more recycling eventually.
The district's budget only includes money for what is known as a clean stream MRF. The facility will only process recyclables that are pre-sorted. Debate continues about whether to add on a more complex and expensive function called a waste stream MRF. That kind of facility would actually remove recyclable material from the garbage. County President Jeff McKim said many people seem to be confused about the two different functions.
Even for me, who follows this fairly closely, it's been very difficult to determine what's part of the waste stream MRF proposal versus what's part of the clean stream MRF proposal. It's been, you know, a lot of that messaging has been shifting around. It's been really hard, and they're both happening at the same time, which makes it even more complicated. You know, when you get down to it, the way I look at it is the clean stream MRF proposal that we have in this budget is really not a new service. It's not a new anything. It's just a reconfiguration of what you're already doing. It's replacing some contracted services with doing things in-house. But you're basically collecting the same commodities at the same point of service. You're just doing a little bit, you're baling them and collecting them in the one location and then doing some of the trucking yourself rather than outsourcing it.
The council later voted to approve the district's budget, which also includes a 5% raise for district employees. Those employees have not had a raise since 2011. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Scott Weddle. Support for Daily Local News comes from Smithville, a local provider of internet, phone, and TV service over a stabilized fiber optic network. Serving Monroe, Greene, Owen, Lawrence, Brown, and Morgan counties. More information on Smithville's full line of services is available at 812-876-2211 or smithville.net.
Coming up, WFHB correspondent Dan Young speaks with conservationist Gary Moody about the environmental impact of the Williams Dam near Bedford and fills us in on an upcoming showing of the film Dam Nation in Bloomington. For today's Community Report, courtesy of Eco Report.
This is Dan Young for Eco Report. On September 20th, I spoke on the phone with Gary Moody, a citizen conservationist from Shelbyville, Indiana. Several years ago, Moody founded an advocacy group focused on water quality and stream ecology called FISH, which Moody stated is an acronym for Fishable Indiana Streams for Hoosiers. Moody is currently involved with activism surrounding the Williams Dam on the East Fork White River downstream from Bedford. He's also helped organize a showing of the film Dam Nation here in Bloomington on Sunday, October 12th at the Buskirk Chumley Theater. Here, Gary Moody describes some of the environmental impacts of the Williams Dam and how he first became aware of them.
Well, like a lot of people in Indiana and even in Monroe County and surrounding areas, I had never heard of Williams Dam. So I was shocked to find that there's a low head dam. It's about 15 feet tall. That's sort of the category. Low head dams are typically under 25 feet or so tall. It's blocking the East Fork White River at, obviously, the little village of Williams. It's downstream of Bedford. It's been there for 100 years. It's blocking about 4,900 square miles of the East Fork White River watershed, which includes, you know, the Muscatatuck, the Big Blue, which is, runs through Shelbyville here. And by blocking, I mean it's blocking fish passage up to the rest of that watershed. Williams Dam was built, it was completed about 1912 as a hydropower generator. And when it went through a couple of ownerships, wound up with Public Service Indiana, they stopped generating power there, mothballed it, whatever, in 1958, turned it over to the state. You know, that wound up with the Department of Natural Resources. It's basically been a big fishing pier. And it creates sort of a reservoir upstream of it where people, you know, run around in powerboats and stuff like that. But it's what we call a deadbeat dam. In that it serves no purpose. It's screwing up the ecology of the East Fork White River, both in terms of fish passage and water quality and habitat and the various things. This process with repowering the dam is quite complex. It involves various federal and state agencies. But everybody acknowledges that the lake sturgeon, which is an endangered species, is present below the dam and not above the dam. Now, some really feisty fish have been able to passage over the dam at really high flood stage, including the Asian carp. That's pretty much it. You know, the sturgeon, they're bottom-dwelling fish. You've got little darters, various endangered and threatened species, which, you know, can't make that jump even at flood stage and with all the current. And one of them, in fact, is a host for an endangered species of mussels. And that's another problem. You've got, there are mussels present in that system below the dam, but the way they reproduce is the larvae attach themselves to fish, like that particular darter, and they take them upstream. And so dams fragment the ecosystem, which is bad. It's sort of like, you know, chopping the rainforest into little bits. It's the same with the river system.
According to Moody, prior to 2008, officials at the Indiana DNR had expressed interest in removing the Williams Dam because of safety concerns and its environmental impacts. But at the end of 2013, the state announced that it had entered into a contract to have the hydroelectric facility at the dam refurbished to produce electricity again. The restored hydroelectric facility at the Williams Dam would produce about 4 megawatts of power, which would be sold to the nearby Crane military installation. Moody says that FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, has given the project a clean environmental bill of health. The project has also been promoted as an environmentally friendly alternative to producing electricity by burning coal or other fossil fuels.
In 2004, the DNR was going to tear the thing down. They rejected an application for reactivating it, saying that it's bad ecologically, and it's deteriorating. It's in terrible shape. If, you know, anybody can go down and look at it and see, it needs to go. So, you know, that changed because of politics and the ensuing administrations in, at the State House. In 2008, this company, they're called Free Flow Power. They're operating under another name here in Indiana. It's called Payne Bridge. But in any case, they filed their application in 2008. Very, very few people knew about this until, you know, they started issuing press releases in December. But throughout, they've been painting this as very green. And hydro is, in terms of, you know, air emissions. Obviously, there's no pollutants like when you're burning coal. However, there are trade-offs. You know, we don't want species to go extinct because of a dam. And the scheme here is to sell the power to Crane Naval Weapons Station. And that's been the intent all along. So, you know, I'm not begrudging that complex their power, but it comes at the expense to, you know, not only the wildlife in the stream, but everybody above the dam. You know, there are sport fish that can't passage that. It affects everyone upstream. In 2004, the DNR was going to tear the thing down, and that's what really still needs to happen. But there should have been an environmental impact statement done on this project, and that's what we petitioned FERC for last spring, and they rejected that. And their findings are just all screwed up. You know, they don't even know that Asian carp has passed the dam, or claim not to. The federal agency, FERC, painted this as a very minor project and even found that there's no significant impact. So under NEPA, as the acronym, they have to do an environmental review, and there are various levels of that. They use an environmental assessment, which is very sort of quick and dirty compared to the full environmental impact statement. I also want to mention that because of this really shoddy and secretive process that's gone on since 2008, I mean, when they finally announced it and let it be known to the public, state owns that dam. That's a public facility, by the way. When they did that in December, it was past the time for any significant public involvement in any legal intervention, which I tried to do belatedly, and they turned it down as untimely. It was a good old boy process. They announced it when it was a done deal, and that's the way things typically work in Indiana, unfortunately. But, you know, with the federal involvement, it shouldn't have been that way, particularly with, you know, things like the Endangered Species Act involved. But because of what happened, we have a petition online, a couple of them actually. Go to freetheriver.com, and there's more information and links there. And also showing the film Damnation in Bloomington to raise aware of this and other dam issues that beat dams that are being removed all over the country. And that's what Damnation shows is one example of that out in Oregon and what that did for the ecosystem there. So we're going to show that at the Buskirk Chumley Theater on October the 12th. That's a Sunday. It's going to be at 7 p.m. It's only $5, and it's a blockbuster film. It's got a big buzz going around the country since it debuted at South by Southwest last spring.
That was Gary Moody from the advocacy group FISH, talking about the environmental impacts of the Williams Dam near Bedford and about an upcoming film showing of the movie Damnation on October 12th in Bloomington at the Buskirk Chumley Theater. For Eco Report, this is Dan Young.
Conservationist Gary Moody, speaking with WFHB correspondent Dan Young about the environmental impact of water dams.
Yesterday, the Daily Local News inaccurately reported that Indiana University has recently decided to invest $34 million in the central heating plant, including the addition of higher efficiency coal burning systems. This information was taken from an outdated press release. We strongly regret this error.
Support for WFHB comes from Blooming Foods Market and Deli, your locally grown co-op grocery since 1976. Blooming Foods features natural, organic, local, and fair trade food and garden items with support for small farmers, co-op producers, and local food artisans. Blooming Foods Market and Deli on 2nd and Fess at Elm Heights, on East 3rd near the College Mall, West 6th near the Courthouse Square, and right up your alley at Kirkwood and Dunn.
Up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. This week on Voices in the Street, examining the implications of the Malaysian Flight 17 crash. Last Wednesday, IU held a memorial service for Carlin Kaiser, who was killed on July 17th while on Malaysian Flight 17, which was shot down over a pro-Russian-held territory of Ukraine. Carlin was among 298 people who died on the flight. Russia has recently claimed that Ukraine bears full responsibility of the attack, while others argue the Russian-supplied missile points to the real culprit. Voices in the Street asked your friends and neighbors about what's next for Russia and Ukraine and if the U.S. should feel any obligation to intervene.
Military's concerned. If it's something we got to get into, we need to get kind of quiet, leave it alone, let them deal with their own problem, then come to us if they need assistance. As far as the plane being shot down, it's a tragedy. Didn't know a thing about it. Can't believe it wasn't the survivors.
In terms of how the U.S. and other countries should respond, I don't know, I'm sure they're going to respond how they usually do. And, like, my opinion doesn't matter too much, but really it would be cool if they just, like, didn't do anything.
I think we should be very strict about it and put a lot of pressure on the Russians, because I think they were responsible. It wasn't done by any normal soldier. I was in the military 20 years, and so you got to be trained to use the equipment they used and to be able to look for an airplane up there at 30,000 feet or so. And so I think the Russians are totally to blame. And I don't think it was the Ukrainians. I think it was the separatists, that somebody probably smuggled the weapons to them and then used it to go up there. And they were trained well enough to be able to shoot at it. And I think the airplane people, the pilot and everything, should be guilty too to some extent, because they shouldn't have flown across a zone that was under fire, under fire.
I believe that Ukraine and Russia are not going to be on good terms no longer. I think we need to maybe not take direct action against Russia, but just more of take a time and just analyze the situation and see what other countries are doing.
Okay, so yeah, situations would worsen between Russia and Ukraine, and the U.S. should stay at a neutral state.
I don't think that it will change much. I'm kind of one that if countries are having inner conflicts with themselves, I really feel like they should kind of deal with that themselves diplomatically. Unfortunately, a lot of times they decide to go to war, but I feel like, I don't want to sound selfish, but I feel like we have enough problems in the U.S. where if we can't deal with our own and fix what's going on, there's really no need for us to go outside and help, because how can we help someone if we're struggling ourselves to deal with a lot of issues we have? So as far as those relations changing, I feel like they've already reached a pitch, so they're kind of just going to stay steady. And U.S. should not respond. Other countries may that are allies with either of those could respond, but I feel like the U.S. should stay out of it.
I think it's hard to know at this point how relations will change between Ukraine and Russia. It seems like their relationship now is fairly volatile, and it seems like it's kind of early to tell. I think the U.S. should respond. You know, I think they have a responsibility globally to respond to these types of events. How they go about that, I'm not entirely sure, but at least providing some sort of input would be helpful.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB, supported by Smithville, your Indiana communications company at smithville.net, and by Blooming Foods Market and Deli, your locally grown co-op grocery. Today's headlines were written by Anson Shoup and Susan Northleaf, along with Joe Crawford for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Dan Young.
Voices in the Street was produced by Kelly Worley. Engineers today are Jose Rodriguez and Jonathan Goffels. Our theme music provided by The Impossible Shapes. Managing producer Joe Crawford. Executive producer Allison Bektesh. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program.
You can hear the daily local news live Monday through Thursday at 5:30 p.m. and all news stories online at WFHB.org.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.